Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Tonight you can tune in for a new episode of On Call with the Prairie Doc on SDPB TV. It airs at 7 p.m. Central, 6 Mountain on SDPB 1. And today we have with us Prairie Doc Dr. Rick Holm on the phone. Dr. Holm, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Lori. Tonight's our first show back after the summer break, and I'm thrilled to be able to be here, and our 18th years of giving this kind of a show. I mean, 18 years doing television has been a great adventure, I have to say.
And you've been through a lot during that 18 years as well.
I have. Mm-hmm. So tonight, Dr. John Burdahl, who is an ophthalmologist and a corneal transplant expert, and Dr. Robert Santella, who is a nephrologist and a kidney transplant expert, will be on the show. And we have an interview with a friend of mine, an internist from Florida, who is waiting for a kidney transplant. Oh. And it should be fascinating to talk about.
All right, so let's talk about organ transplants and organ donation, because most of us deal with it really when we get our driver's license and decide whether we want to be a donor, and we never have to be on the other end of that request. But many people do, and they have to wait a long time for us. Tell us a little bit about what the waiting list is like for organ donations.
Well, there's 115-some thousand people with kidney or heart or liver or lung failure that could be saved. And many of those people die before they get their transplant. A good friend of mine was one of them. He was in our choir. So, it breaks my heart that people are waiting. My friend, the doctor from Florida, he's been on the waiting list 3 or 4 years. And he's been, called and said, are you ready to go tomorrow? Probably 10 times. And then, sorry, the kidney isn't just right for you. And so you'll have to continue waiting. And he's been kind of hanging on that for quite a while. The organ transplant is different than tissue transplant. Do you know the difference?
Explain, please.
Well, the organs that have to be delivered still beating or still alive, are the kidneys, the heart, the lungs, the pancreas. And some of those you can only get from a deceased donor, a person who's in a motor vehicle accident or a car accident or trauma from a motorcycle or whatever it might be. The brain is dead, but the body still lives. And up to 8 lives can be saved from one of those deceased donors. And, when you die, you're gone, and the body is a mere, it's your soul that matters, not the body anymore. So, please mark yes on the driver's license when you get a new driver's license, and be willing to donate. We've done really well with that. What we're not doing so well is with live donors, kidney, people who are willing to give up their kidney for another person to live, or a part of their liver. Those things can occur and can save lives, and people are waiting. It's a true gift, a loving, altruistic gift with minimal risk. Can't say no risk, but minimal risk to the giver. And what a wonderful gift of life that can be. So, liver, living or deceased donors for part of that, and certainly some of those people with a need for pancreas or a need for lungs or a need for, other organs, are waiting for a deceased donor. So that's the difference.
All right. So what, when you say that, you can save up to 8 lives, is that just because there's in a person who is an organ donor, there's so much that can be taken and passed on to huge sort of ripple effect there. 8 lives, the potential of that seems outstanding.
Well, if you're in a motorcycle accident and your head is traumatized terribly, but your body's still hanging in there and will die one day shortly, if you are willing to, if you've marked the spot on the driver's license, You know, two kidneys can be given, two parts of your liver, two lives can be saved from liver transplant. You know, pancreases, two lungs can be donated. I mean, up to eight lives are saved. I can't remember the last one. And if about 100 people can receive tissues from that body. So it's 108. You know, it's just tremendous. And, you know, I've never really thought so much about it. You know, wow, that won't happen to me until I came down with cancer, you know, and suddenly all those maladies become very personal.
Right.
So we really think about this. There's a family whose daughter had a ruptured aneurysm in her brain, and the brain was gone. And so the family, you know, very, very religious family who lovingly donated their daughter's body to help others. And like I said, 108 lives were affected, and eight lives were saved because of this wonderful gift. Hmm. So, you know, one can't talk about this. You can donate from a blood draw your bone marrow. They'll extract your bone marrow. They used to have to do a bone marrow biopsy and aspiration. Now they just take it from your blood, and you can save lives throughout the world. With a bone marrow transplant through that kind of gift.
What are some of the ways, you know, if you have a loved one who is, you know, the brain is gone and you're, you know, moving into this, the death is going to be different, isn't it? The farewell is going to be slightly different. How do you prepare families to do that really well, so that the grieving process is as healthy as it can be?
Boy, you know, how do you tell someone very bad news? And I've often said the best way to do this is, number one, 100% honestly. And number two, pull all the compassion that you have in your heart and your soul out and just let that guide you, as you say. There's no perfect words to put it there. Just say it with true compassion and 100% honesty. I think that people have to grieve, and I've watched people grieve through the years in many different ways, and none of us will escape that unless we die soon. You know what I mean? Grieving is part of what we all have to go through. We lose things in life, including, you know, the stock market, or or you lost your job, or other things can happen. There's always losses. I think we all, you know, we have to encourage people to pick themselves up by the bootstraps and get rolling again. And that's your best way. You know, you just keep on keeping on and connect with people. The more connections we make, you know, the connections you have at church or through your community or, you know, through the volunteer things that you can do, that all helps people with the grieving process. And, you know, we just have to go through it. That's part of being alive. And that makes the joys brighter and more colorful and more wonderful. So I think, you know, if we can just realize that life is not easy, but all of the ups and the downs are part of what makes it wonderful and full. So I would encourage people to live their lives the fullest they can be all that they can be, fill their hearts with compassion, and listen as hard as you can to the other people around you.
Are there obstacles to, you know, if so many people die, you know, 20 people per day die waiting, you know, for that organ, is the problem that not enough people are willing to donate, or is the problem just that there just aren't that many matches and there aren't that many people who die with organs that are viable at that point?
Well, I think, you know, part of the reason is family's resistance. So I think, you know, you can mark that spot on your license. But I think a word to your family, all of your family members, I think there are two things that you need to do. One is you should do the organ talk. Please, if somebody can benefit from part of my body, then please say yes and encourage it right off the bat. And number two, and oh, by the way, you know, my advance directive is that if I don't have a viable brain, you know, let me go. Don't drag me through suffering in with a feeding tube or IV fluids when I'm certainly dying. Allow me a natural death, you know, allow a natural death when the time is right. And so family members think, oh, my God, I want to save everybody, save, 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 you know. And there's a lot of harm and suffering brought on by that kind of thinking. So those are the two things I think we should all have with our family. The organ donation word, please do it. And two, don't drag me through all sorts of suffering to keep me alive in a bed in an institution with a feeding tube.
What are some of the advances that you're seeing in the medical literature or in your communications with other physicians about where organ transplants are going in the future? We must be so much better at doing it now than we have been in the past, but there's a pretty bright future here as well, isn't there?
Well, you know, think about it. Let's say you have diabetes. It might be that we will be able to inject cells into the liver, and the liver cells will pick up the responsibility that BET cells in the pancreas and insulin can be made there and diabetes be taken care of. There can be transplants of smaller parts of tissues. We can grow tissues in petri dishes that can be allowed to be transplanted. And we're not talking, you know, thousands of years ahead of time. We're talking coming up soon. So there are tremendous advances happening in medicine. And, you know, along with the things that disgust me, like the cost of healthcare and the cost of medicine, I think there is these wonderful things that are advancing that we have to just glory in because the things that have happened from the time that I started medicine where leukemia was a death sentence, it's 80% curable now. You know, the cure rates that are happening, even with pancreatic cancer, the hope is if you can just keep dancing on a lily pad, in 5 years, well, there'll be a cure. You know, you keep hoping. But let's face it, we're none of us going to live forever. And so we need to make the best lives that we can while we're here. And a lot of that has to do with giving. And that brings back the issue of being willing to donate. That's a wonderful gift. It gives meaning to a person's life. And so I'd strongly encourage thoughts about that.
Dr. Rick Holm, On Call with the Prairie Doc, returns to his live broadcast tonight. You can see it 7 p.m. Central, 6 p.m. Mountain on SDPB TV1 and on the On Call with the Prairie Doc Facebook page. Make sure you're following that as well. Dr. Holm, thank you so much for being here. We appreciate your time.
Oh, you're very welcome, Lori. Thank you.